good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. And as Ray said in his weather forecast, a touch milder today.
Yes. Well, that's what Jordan Sherman says.
Yes,
I just read them, you know.
I know you do. Well, good morning and welcome to our panel discussion. Again, very nice to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to be a part of our program.
You all right?
I looked over at Ray, and he's hearing
the noise from Alan's
headphones, and it's just funny.
But it's all right, sir. Whatever you want to do, it's fine with us.
I'll turn this thing off. That's probably what it is, right? Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Let me introduce the panel to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very busy turning my device off.
All right. Well,
something that has been problematic for years.
And Ray Graff is here.
Here I am, your H-bomb of justice.
how's your device?
Well.
And Judy Patrick joins us. She is the editor of the Daily Gazette, was a brief guest on our program yesterday, and we asked her at the end if she would stick around for today because you did some media project action earlier.
So. Yes, and I'm here with a traffic report. Roads are clear this morning.
That's right. Much better today than yesterday.
Yes.
Excellent.
So she's here because she was on the media project,
mm-hmm.
and then we asked her to stay around as a
That's
result
right.
of that. Did I ever tell you about how I was on the Ernie Kovac show? Yes, I did.
No. Oh, you might have.
If you say you've not heard this
story. Okay, I'm sorry. You know what? But I loved Ernie Kovacs.
Hey, you have sat across from him for how many years at the Fun Drive, and you've never heard the story?
The story of Ernie Kovacs?
I tend to blot things out.
Okay forget right. it. I'm not going right. to tell
I
you
I want
to
hear it now.
Well, my mother was on a program, and she brought the cute twins. It was something like... There's one in every family, and
what about Queen for a Day?
No, it wasn't Queen for a Day. I used to tell Selma Kaplan it was Queen for a Day, and she was very excited. And when she found out it was this other program, she was not excited. Sort of
and how old were the twins?
About 11, in our Boy Scout uniforms and all the rest. And there we were, and Ernie Kovacs had the program before, but we had to come like 2 hours in advance. And there we were, and Ernie Kovacs comes out and sees the cute little twinnies, and he grabs us both. He was a genius, and
yes, he was.
And he puts us on the stage, and he has somebody get two sheets, and he puts a sheet over each of us, and he says, "I swear this has nothing to do with trick photography." And he lifts the sheet off one, and says, "Here," puts the sheet back, goes over the other one, lifts the sheet up, and there's the guy. And that's how I.
Now,
got...
was this when he had a local show, or was this when he went national?
No, I think this was local,
yeah.
CBS or something like that.
What a genius! Why is he not on the oldie TV channels?
Because
they didn't have the kinescope.
Well, no, you right? used to see him on Channel 17. They would show them. Percy Dove Tonsil and everybody else?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a very good question.
All right. I want to see Ernie Kovacs in 2016 on the TV.
Sorry if I've bored you all with that story once again.
No, he was very funny.
You've enraged me now. I want to see more Kovacs.
Yeah.
Well, good morning and welcome to the program. It's very nice to have you with us. And let me get you to the first item up for bids, and that is a topic that I felt bad because we got going on other things yesterday, and we didn't get to this yesterday, and now there's so much more to talk about, so I'm almost glad that we didn't, and that is what's going on in North Korea. So, that little story. So, here's what we think we sort of know. I don't know how much we know, but here's what we think we know. The United Nations Security Council condemned North Korea for its nuclear test on Wednesday, but there was no evidence yet that the North's most powerful backer, China, was willing to stiffen sanctions in a way that could push the unpredictable country to the point of collapse or slow its nuclear progress. As the question of how the international community should respond remained unanswered, White House officials, eager to undercut whatever propaganda value the North saw in claiming its first success in detonating a thermonuclear device, said that initial data from its monitoring stations in Asia were not consistent with a test of a hydrogen bomb.
All right. Well, this is a tough one because, as I think I may have mentioned, Judy, on the media project, the first blush, the first thing we heard was basically they had claimed that they had set off a hydrogen device, and it was taken very seriously by a lot of people. Then by the next day, we're hearing that it really may not have been hydrogen. It just may have been a little old nuclear. And then one wonders whether or not the press did it right. In other words, are they downplaying it now for some reason or another, because it is will clearly denigrate the great leader, or whatever he's called these days, that he didn't, he was a liar.
So you think the press is playing along with an administration strategy to tense up Kim Jong-un?
No, because I, you know, I'm not much of a conspiratorialist. However, Ray, I avoided your trap there. I would say, however, that if the government is giving out specific data that indicates that it wasn't really hydrogen, then the press would have no choice but to go along with it, right?
So I dismiss all these that conspiracy theory as well. I think that the early reports of this hydrogen bomb did include comments from people doubting whether or not it was really
absolutely.
A hydrogen bomb. I think that happened from the get-go. Although, if you did watch the cable news channels, they were saying, well, this really, you know, elevates the concern we have for Korea. This is what the difference with a hydrogen bomb is, and this is what's going to happen.
Ever pick an argument with either of you, but I do think that a lot of people took it extraordinarily seriously.
Well, and you know, I don't have a problem with that, because I think we are often too easily dismissed. Oh, well, it's just North Korea and they're not really serious. But I think it's a real problem. We have some real problems coming up with North Korea that need to be dealt with. I think whatever they're doing there, we need to address. I don't think we can't bury our head in the sand on North
Korea. And I loved all of the China experts who got into the mix, because apparently China's been having a lot of trouble with North Korea and now is trying to make it better and to resolve their differences. And if you read between the lines, anyway, in the story, is it Kim Jong-un stuck his thumb in China's eye there and said, we're not interested in that. And that explosion was a little too close for comfort, I think, to the Chinese. So one wonders.
I wonder, in a situation like that, where you have a classified experiment of some kind by a very closed society, where else does the media go but to our government for the information, and doesn't that pose a huge problem?
That's a great question.
Thank you. Alan?
Nobody has an answer, you know, but it's a great question.
I mean, one of the things people were looking at, the seismic monitoring of it. So that seems to be like an open thing. And so there was the seismic activity. That's one of the things I looked at yesterday. Somebody said, is this for real? And I go, well, there was the seismic activity.
5.1.
But what do I know what 5.1 means, right? And so there was no context.
5.1, you know, we know about earthquakes, and 5.1 is up there.
Well, but also the depth of the earthquake. The initial report, I think, out of South Korea said it was at 10 kilometers down, which would be way deeper than a nuclear or thermonuclear test would be. And another one said, no, it was right at the surface or thereabouts. So
who's to say?
Yeah, so you rely on scientists, but scientists, you know, get their funding from the government. I mean, if you're really suspicious about this thing, there are agencies in Europe that monitor nuclear activity worldwide. But again, they're saying these things take time. Oh. They have to monitor the air quality, get those kinds of readings. Definitely, I think there was. There, over time, this has developed into you get far more information and far more data, and you can make far better decisions than you could yesterday at this time.
Okay, yeah. So here's the question for all of you. What if you were the president of the United States? What would you try to do? Now, we know that there's this appeal to really put heavy, heavy sanctions onto the North Koreans. And one wonders whether that doesn't make them even a little bit more dangerous than they have been. Well, Ray, you're looking for.
Are there any sanctions left that we can impose
on
North Korea?
Well, apparently, according to what I was reading this morning, there are. And they rise to the kind of things that we were doing with the Iranians, which made them come to the table. But one gets the feeling with the Iranians at this stage that they are a little bit more. I mean, there is some semblance of democracy, believe it or not, in Iran. You know, there are elections. There are moderate candidates. There are not so moderate candidates. That doesn't exist in North Korea. And one gets the feeling that if he has to starve his people, Kim's going to starve his people.
Yeah, I heard that on NPR this morning as well, that the sanctions against North Korea are not as severe as they were against Iran. And I thought, what else could we do? What are we doing with North Korea at this point?
I mean, the double-edged sword here is if in fact you ratchet up sanctions, if that's possible, then assuming that this country is as poor as we think it is, then doesn't that make the risk of them selling the nukes that they do have for sure to third parties and therefore making us less secure?
I mean, one just knows that there doesn't seem to be any outer limit for this particular group of people. And they, if they're going to explode nuclear bombs just to make us, and then, you know, sooner or later we come back, don't we? And we say, okay, we'll give you some rice if you behave yourself a little while. No, that's we do that.
Yeah,
I wasn't a slur.
Okay,
because. Not to minimize what has happened over the past several days, but even if you take that situation off the table, we still have known for a long time that we're in a precarious position with North Korea. And to your question, very wise question earlier, if you're the president, what do you do?
Right. And here we are in the middle of a political campaign, and you can be, as we know, totally irresponsible and start to yell, bomb the hell out of him, or do this or that if you happen to be a Republican candidate and he's not tough enough on them. Well, what exactly would you do to be tougher on them? I mean, if the Chinese can't handle the North Koreans, and that's not exactly a democratic society, what in the world would you expect the president of the United States to do other than to say, okay, we're going to make sure you don't get a needle and a thread over there, period.
You know, in some respects, I'd like to see this being discussed by the presidential candidates, and then in other respects, no, I don't want to start that.
Because you know what it'll be.
Well, how fruitful will it be?
Right.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to some of the letters we're getting. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley, investing funds from donors and nonprofits to support education, culture, and community needs in Dutchess, Putnam, and Ulster counties. CFHVNY.org. Oblong Books and Music in Millerton and Rhinebeck, serving the Hudson Valley for over 40 years, wishing WAMC listeners a Happy New Year. Oblongbooks.com. The Opelka Gallery at the Sage Colleges, now hosting From Concept to Console, Art and Aesthetics in Video Game Design, and Related Films and Events, sage.edu/opelka. And Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture and chiropractic therapy, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998, windyhollowvet.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We're going to be going over to a news break at the bottom of the hour in just a moment. But before we do that, we have a letter or two, maybe just a.
Well, from Jay, just to correct Alan, sanctions did not bring Iran to the negotiating table. Iran's nuclear ambitions brought the U.S. to the table. Jay, maybe a little on both sides, but we certainly read a great deal about how the populace in Iran were furious about the kinds of deprivations that they were going through. So that's just to correct you, Jay. Oh, there's another one here. All right.
Yes, okay.
From Tom. Tom checks in almost every morning. He's a humorous fellow.
Yeah.
He's our official humor person. He says...
Official.
Judy. Nice to see Judy.
That was the worst Cary Grant impression I've ever heard. Judy. the death metal version of Cary Grant. Well done.
You know, and sadly, most of the people in my newsroom now are too young to even get that reference.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Is that sad, though?
Or but didn't it make you sick?
You got to be kind of sick of it.
Yeah,
by
back
now,
in the day,
right?
When everyone would come up, oh, Judy, 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 you look wonderful today.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
Let's take it to the break.
All right. We're at the break. We'll go hear some news. We'll come back, and we'll have other
Call
things to discuss. No, we have much more work to do, Ray.
All right.
Not off that easy.
Fine.
We'll be back. We welcome your communication, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Judy Patrick all join us this morning. Make up the panel. We welcome you, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel and to our discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us as always. Let me reintroduce our panel to you, and then we'll get to other issues that are happening that we want to talk about. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. WAMC's Ray Graff is here.
Hey.
And Judy Patrick, the editor of the Daily Gazette, is here as well. Good morning.
Hey, hey, hey.
All right. So
I don't think you can do that anymore.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Yes, Ray.
Bill Cosby reference.
Rotunda Albert. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think that's the politically correct part of that, no.
No.
Let's move on to other issues. And let's see. I'm sorry. I'm having a momentary crisis. No, I have lots of topics.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Sandra Bland indictment. We talked about this, of course, when it was originally announced that there would be no charges. Now the state trooper who arrested Sandra Bland, the Chicago area woman who 3 days later was found hanged in her cell at the Waller County Jail in Hempstead, Texas, has been indicted on a perjury charge, a special prosecutor announced on Wednesday. Hours after the indictment was announced against the trooper Brian Encinia, the Department of Public Safety said that the state police agency, quote, will begin termination proceedings to discharge him. The charges against the trooper, a Class A misdemeanor, was announced at the end of a day of grand jury deliberations. It carries a possible penalty of 1 year in jail, a $4,000 fine. The charge stemmed from a one-page affidavit that the trooper filed with jail officials justifying the arrest of Ms. Bland, who was pulled over July 10th in a routine traffic stop in Prairie View, northwest of Houston, for failing to use her turn signal. Bland, 28, who was black, was returning to Texas to take a job at Prairie View A&M University, her alma mater.
This is one of the worst stories of all of them. It was horrible the way that she was treated. It was horrible the way she was thrown to the ground. It was horrible the way she was talked to. This could have easily been avoided. And this is exactly what we're talking about when we talk about the training of police officers, so that there is a certain kind of sensitivity that goes with the way in which you you stop somebody or you talk to them. This was provocative, and it was a purposely provocative. And you can be sad, you know, I mean, the official version is she committed suicide, but who knows?
Right, you have to wonder whether this was the most appropriate charge to levy against this officer, whether or not there was something more serious like official misconduct or assault. I don't know why the grand jury chose this misdemeanor, which could easily plead down to something else, and there'd be, you know, no jail time and maybe a $100 fine. I mean, it could be. I'll be interested to see the reaction from the family, from the community there today.
Well, and this comes after the original of no charges being filed and the outcry over that. But as to your point, so you come up with something, but it's still not very strict.
Yeah.
Given the end result
of
the case, of course. Right.
Well, but I think Judy's on the right track. I think they had to do something. And, that's what was done here. I mean, you know, perjury is not exactly the... But we have seen this happen again and again and again. It happened, with a state legislator who got sent to jail, you know, for perjury, for lying to the FBI. And so, folks, if the FBI comes to your house, don't lie to them.
Right, I think
if you get nothing else out of this morning's program, that's the message.
Piece of advice. The other thing is push the little red button. Put your iPhone out there and push the little red button during the question.
And I haven't seen any reaction yet to this story. This charge.
It is interesting though, because if you look at the video and all of the things that went on in that recording, you're right, Judy. There would seem to be something like from the New York Times. The trooper wrote that he removed Ms. Bland from her car to more safely conduct a traffic investigation. But, quote, the grand jury found that statement to be false, a special prosecutor, Sean McDonald, said. So this point that they are, in fact, indicting him on would be one, and maybe the only one, where a lawyer might be able to defend that, saying, oh, you should get a person out of the car to conduct a more safe investigation. So it's possible he walks on that. But
well,
yet, if you look at the video, you say, well, God,
he's being pretty rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I wonder whether or not when the grand jury... Okay, so this is a grand jury. There's an indictment, right?
Right.
Grand juries just generally don't indict cops. I mean, it's a wide-ranging sort of assertion, but they don't. And juries do not often convict cops. So we'll have to see.
There has to be a reason why some of the other things we saw and heard were not prosecutable. There has to be. And we're not lawyers, and we don't know.
Or as they say on television, stay tuned.
And again, this whole discussion about grand juries and how they operate and whether this is the best way to run our criminal justice system, an issue that comes up every once in a while. We talk about it a lot, and then it goes away.
Well, we will, obviously, we want to, we'll be talking more about this, and I'm sure we'll be talking more about outcry on this and other cases as well. Let's go to another issue, and then we'll take a break in just a few moments. I do want to, Roy Moore is back in the news again, the Alabama Chief Justice, addressing a pro-life Mississippi a rally, and ultimately yesterday ordered counties to stop issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples, although it is unclear if large numbers of local officials will follow his directive. In an administrative order that he announced and then put into effect yesterday afternoon, Chief Judge Roy Moore, who has been a key antagonist of gay rights advocates, said a recent court ruling suggests it is not clear that the United States Supreme Court's June decision legalizing same-sex marriage nationally applies in Alabama. Can anyone help me with that?
I think that makes a certain amount of sense.
How does that make sense?
Really, it couldn't be more clear.
Yeah.
I'm so naive. I think that judges really would have the ultimate respect for a judicial decision, but in this case, this guy is off the wall once again.
And some do, Judy. Many of the judges he was over, talking to administratively over, are saying, no, we're not going to listen to this.
So it's just posturing, I guess, at this point, or just grandstanding,
guys
maybe
like
a better
that,
word?
Guys like that, you know, they run for governor and they win.
Yeah, and the other question is, so maybe, is he just doing it for the publicity? Maybe we shouldn't cover this kind of stuff, but obviously some people are...
Well, he's done a lot of things that have gone to the courts, and it seems like it's more than just for publicity.
True, but in this case, it does seem that some people are following. There are a couple of counties where they stopped issuing marriage licenses to gay couples.
And it is a direct order from...
A judge,
right?
Most people, I'd do it.
It is sort of the way the system is supposed to work, except apparently in Alabama where things are different according to the...
Until the state, the Alabama Supreme Court makes the decision.
Yes.
It's a strange state. You know, in the back in the day, have I ever told you this?
No.
It's an Ernie Kovacs story. Get ready.
I was working as an intern in the Congress. And I was working for a man I really loved, and he was sheltering Robert Jones, who was Judge Jones, as a matter of fact, who was refusing to go along with Wallace on the Civil Rights Act. And he was in our office, and he was hiding. And the Wallace people were looking all over the building for him. So it's a whole other culture. I mean, really wild.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will get to other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from John Lee Auctions, offering estate liquidations, appraisals, and auction services for over 40 years, purchasing jewelry, coins, silver, gold, art, and antiques throughout the Northeast. JonLeeAuctions.com. The Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org. And the Center for Digital Arts, Peekskill, 20 years of offering art and technology courses with post-production studios, web design, UX design, and more, sunywcc.edu for spring registration.
Good morning. Welcome back to Welcome back to our roundtable program this morning. Judy Patrick is here. Ray Graff is here. Alan Chartok is here. I'm here. And we welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. We have been talking about several issues. Alan, are there any letters you would like to get to?
Well, Jim writes and says, you should never lie to the FBI, but apparently there are no consequences for lying to Congress, and then period, and it says Hillary. That's from Jim. That's what Jim said. Let's see here. There is somebody who wants to know, and I'm going to say it just so everybody knows. Might it be possible to post a list of all bumper music played on the show, which is always great?
We do indeed.
Either I'm going to read these letters, or we'll answer.
You know what? I didn't know that, and I've often because the bumper music is great.
It's beautiful, Charlie Parker today.
Yeah,
Rob's doing a good job.
Here's the thing: because the show is a live show, it's not available prior to are going on the air. But by the end of the show, we like to say comfortably by mid-afternoon, that information is posted.
And the great Sarah LaDuke answers appropriately.
Okay.
We do post a list. Due to the way the show rolls out, we aren't usually able to post it, just as Joe just said, until after the show. But we do post it at wamc.org/roundtable.
Yeah. Well done.
any other correspondence we need to...
I was reaching... I'll tell you, I was reaching hard. And Thomas writes, send in Dennis Rodman. Now that is... Dennis Rodman, you may remember, the basketball player, and he went to North Korea.
He's a buddy.
Made a fool of himself, yeah.
Caused a lot of problems.
True. And I guess, I'm afraid, Joe, that's about as good as I can get.
There's one from Bonnie.
Well, then you read it because I don't have it.
Okay. Panel, on the contrary, listened closely to the first part of their exchange. This is on Sandra Bland. On the contrary, listened close to the first part of their exchange. He was picking up on her tension and figuring out how to provoke her. He found it when he forbade her to smoke, which, as we all know, smokers consider calming. He knew full well what he was doing, pushing her buttons, fishing for a reaction, and he got a big one.
Absolutely right.
And then we got a letter from Ellen. Did you see that?
No, my machine needs help.
Okay. Ray, can you help with this machine? And
I could stamp on it.
Okay. Dear Ellen, you made a comment on whether or not it was really suicide, so please let me ask you about your thoughts on that. There is something very frustrating hearing that the only legal process is whether the officer was too rough in this treatment of Ms. Bland, and now lying about that, which is really about his opinion, and so probably nothing comes of it, and there is a lot more, but it goes against our...
Well, Joe, strange things have happened in jails. Rikers is getting rather famous for goon squads made up of corrections officers who impose their own level of justice. People have allegedly committed suicide in jails, although I do believe there may have been some kind of a watch going on, but I'm not sure. The implication is you have to be very careful.
And being thrown in jail can be a very traumatic situation. I was in a court covering a case once, and a young man, instead of paying a $100 fine, wanted to go spend a weekend in jail. And the judge, really cautioned him and said, "It's really worth $100. Just pay the $100 because you have no idea how rough it can be in jail, and just being confined like that can be very traumatic."
Oh boy.
And here's the other thing too, which is that we have a case where yes, it certainly is very tough. But also, the worst offense, other than the conflict, was that she didn't have her turn signal on.
Right. You know, exactly. Oh, in this case, exactly.
All right. There you go, Alan.
Thank you, Joe. Where did you learn how to, you know?
The IT department has been here.
Yes, it's a pit crew here.
Just so everybody knows, I hand Joe my tablet, and he fixes it.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did that.
Well, he was in the AV club in middle school.
How did you know?
I was there too, brother. Of course, back then it was film strips.
That's right.
Yeah.
Beep. Yeah. And then you turn the next.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you ever have one go on fire?
Oh, sure. Well, that was the good part.
Yeah, that was the fun part.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that. What was the
question? Oh,
you put the film strip, and if it got too close to the bulb, then it could melt it. That was one thing. But then it would just sort of ignite and go on fire, and then it would often set off the alarms, and you'd get a nice little.
And what was the name of the
recess.
One of the best movies that was ever made? Was it Il Postino?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk. Okay, go ahead.
You know the Italian film about the kid who gets raised in the what? You guys don't know
isn't
about
this
that
like
one?
A so kid on a horse?
People, you. It was a wonderful film about a kid who gets raised basically in the movie house, and the place catches on fire.
Oh, okay, I know. Yeah, I do know the story you're talking about.
Wonderful. I just thought I'd mention that.
Okay, right.
There's not much else is going on.
No,
that's a good point.
Here
we
go.
What else you got?
Governor Cuomo continued laying out his vision for a modernized statewide transportation network on Wednesday with one more ambitious project, the renovation of Penn Station, one of the busiest transit halls in the Western Hemisphere, and the creation of an adjunct train and retail hub within the walls of the block-long General Post Office across 8th Avenue. I have questions about this project.
Please, yes, because I've read this very carefully preparing.
Thank you, Alan. During a news conference at Madison Square Garden in Manhattan, Mr. Cuomo called on New Yorkers to think big as they did in the past with equal measures of ambition and audacity. The announcement was one in a series of appearances by the governor centering on his plans of improving New York's infrastructure, which include adding a third track to part of the Long Island Railroad's main line. On Wednesday morning in Syracuse, he proposed spending $22 billion to improve roads and bridges largely upstate. Now, my understanding was that way, 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 way back in when Hillary Clinton was a senator of New York, she stood on the steps of the post office across the street from Madison Square Garden / Penn Station and said, this will be the new Penn Station, and that post office building would then go down into you would go into it, and then obviously down into the bowels into the train station, and then and they've been working on it for years.
It's going to be called the Moynihan,
the Daniel Moynihan Transportation Center, or whatever. So what? Because there's still scaffolding up there. So what is going on with that, and how is this different?
Well, it isn't getting done, and it also is part of the new Andrew Rehabilitation Program, which we see changing from a guy whose numbers kept going lower and lower, and now he's got a number of places he's going, and they're all pretty good. One of them is another track for the Long Island Railroad. Another of them is for huge amounts of money to be sunk into infrastructure in upstate New York. And another is to go down here and to announce that he's going to take Madison Square Garden and this building. They're right next to each other. I have to say that I think he's got something here because I have spent too much time in the Amtrak station in Penn Station, and it's awful. It's depressing. It's awful. And it's not good. So he's doing these very popular infrastructure fixes. Gone are the days of Andrew the Conservative, who didn't want to spend any money in the beginning. And now this is the sort of new Andrew, who is obviously getting some very good advice.
The other aspect of this I don't quite understand is, for those of you who do not know what we're talking about, Penn Station is basically under, well, not basically, is under Madison Square Garden.
Correct, that's right.
And so there have long been calls for a new garden, a new Madison Square Garden, because that is also an aging facility. I would have thought that perhaps the two would go hand in hand. This doesn't seem to do that, and I find that interesting as well.
That's correct. I think I think I read, I perused, that they were going to take down the garden. No?
I don't know about the garden. Maybe I'm wrong.
I apologize in advance.
Yeah. Don't do that while the Knicks are doing well.
Okay, and I want to know...
Well, the developers who had sought a tenant before closing on the deal had proposed several plans, including moving Madison Square Garden within the walls of the post office, which would have enabled them to build a glass mall and skyscrapers over and near Penn Station, but ultimately there was no progress on that idea.
Is Madison Square Garden a city-owned entity, or is it owned by...
the Dolans, right?
The Dolans.
I think it's owned by the Dolans.
Yes, because they also, they're in with... Rockefeller Center, right?
Well, I love the idea of the governor is proposing big projects and encouraging people to think big. And I think New York City, Penn Station, does need something done. It is worrisome that the other project has just sat there and not developed.
And there were developers, by the way, who had been chosen to do that. And they are still eligible to get in on this, but he wants it done. He wants the bids done in 90 days. That's pretty quick. I can just say, could I have 1 second here, Joe, as the reader of some letters, and say that 4 people have now written to make sure that everybody knew it was Cinema Paradiso.
That's what I said. I said that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Not El Postino.
I said El Postino. They're very similar films. One's about a postman. The other was about, both great films.
All right. We're set on that. So 90 days, and do you think this will be a project, as Judy says? And I mean, obviously, it's good to see projects, and certainly I agree with you, Alan, that, if you have to spend any amount of time in Penn Station, it's not a happy place. Well, most transportation hubs aren't, but when you're watching...
Given the grand history of it.
But when you're watching the... Well, it's no Grand Central.
Right.
There's no beauty to it.
It's depressing.
It's akin to waiting in a DMV office for an hour.
Yeah.
So what's the price tag on this? Is it... In the billions, correct?
I just had that. Thank you.
The Andrew theory is that you give away the rights to develop this, so that people who spend the money will have the stores in this complex, and therefore average New Yorkers
won't be footing the bill. That would be good.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. There are people who object. Say, well, the last thing we need is another shopping mall, in the middle of New York.
But by the same token...
I mean, how many CVSs and Rite Aids can you have in one place?
It is unclear exactly how the more than $3 billion project, which the governor is calling the Empire Station Complex, will be paid for. But Mr. Cuomo is expected to unveil a financial plan for his transportation network at next week's State of the State speech. So $3 billion, that's a big project. And to your point, Alan, as far as, how many more of these things do you need? However, when you're talking about a transportation hub and you're expecting to take the 550 train out,
sure,
and it gets delayed for an hour and a half, you're looking for you're a captive audience. Give me that CVS.
You're looking for Zorro's.
Right.
Yeah, and as you guys can attest that it's not just a New York City issue. There are people from this region that regularly use that transportation hub, and that it is an issue for us in this region as well.
Well, pretty much anyone in the Northeast who is looking to go to New York City from Toronto to Florida. So it's a major corridor. There's a lot there. Anyone who's in it on a busy time knows how many people travel through it at any given time. And also I love these old buildings. I would love to see that post office be integrated, because it's a gorgeous post office inside.
It is.
Really,
it is.
It's beautiful. All right. We have one more quick story, and that is the Baseball Hall of Fame, which lies in our listening area in Cooperstown, New York, yesterday announced the class of 2016. Class, and two gentlemen will be inducted into the Hall of Fame and have made the cut. One, Ken Griffey Jr., who set a record yesterday, right, Ray?
Broke Tom Seaver's record for the highest percentage a vote.
It was near unanimous.
Yep.
But not unanimous. There's always some person out there, some sports writer. And by the way, they're trying to cull that list of who you have to be an active sports writer in order to do it. And the New York Times, by the way, does not permit its people to vote. Did you know that?
Why? I did not know that.
Because, I don't know, somehow it's conflictive. Judy, you're the press expert.
I don't know.
But they do not.
There was speculation that he would get 100%, though.
Well, you see, there's always somebody who wants to throw a little bit of rain on the parade.
Well, either way, he got in.
Yep.
And then also...
Piazza.
Mike Piazza.
Deservedly so.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was a Met?
No, because he was the greatest hitting, arguably the greatest hitting catcher of all time.
I was being sardonic. I'm
sorry. He wants to go in as a Met, and so you bring up a question.
Yeah. Well, how does that work? You have to wear.
They
the
get
cap?
The determination, right?
I don't believe the player gets the determination.
Really?
Well, maybe he has some sway.
See, I thought it did. I thought they had the say as to what they.
Well, I'm sure the folks in Cooperstown are listening. And they'll let us know.
That's right.
Well, they do listen. We know they listen.
Jeff Idelson, give us a call.
Yes.
All right. We are out of time. Thank
Too
you very
late.
Much for being with us. And we still have Cinema Paradiso letters coming in.
Yeah.
So,
we're now up to the 15th Cinema Paradiso letter. Forget about the North
That's
Koreans.
Right.
We don't care about them. But Cinema
movie,
Paradiso.
Yeah.
The old Postino always rings twice, right?
We'll have more roundtable after this.